So I kind of want to start out with, I noticed in the locations that you shot a little bit in Rhode Island on top of New
I did.
York. Yeah, can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, so it's a New York set film, but actually the way it ended up happening is there was a producer who I really wanted to work with on this who was based out of Rhode Island. So in order to get him involved, we kind of made the decision to do most of all of the exteriors in New York and then a lot of the interiors in Rhode Island where he had connections and access to locations and stuff. And it actually ended up working out really well. New York is my favorite city in the world to shoot in because you can kind of just go anywhere and do anything as long as you're not obstructing traffic. They don't really care that much about permits or things like that as long as you're not in the way. But where it gets tricky is the spaces can be really small. It can be really hard to, if you're going to go shoot in like a bar or a restaurant, they might want a lot of money to do that because they have to close it down. Whereas in a smaller town like Rhode Island, people are so excited to have you because they don't get a lot of film. And it's almost like the opposite where they're like, oh, will you please shoot in my restaurant? Like, I'll buy everybody a drink if you do that. Or so it actually worked out. Yeah, it actually worked out really well for us.
So as far as once you got that producer, did things start to kind of come aboard as far as getting the film made, or what was the process? Did you bring on Joey? I mean, how did it all work out?
Oh, as far as getting the film made, basically, no. I started with recruiting a producer. So once him and I, so he him and I produced together. Once I kind of had my producing team in place, then we started, the casting process. Joey actually came on very late to the film. We were casting this film for months and months, and what happened was this is a very, very low budget movie, and usually when you're doing movies at this budget range, you tend to find the acting that's available to you can be a real mixed bag, some as far as what level people are on. And I knew that this movie, because of the nature of it, because it was a drama, I knew that it was going to kind of live and die by the performances. So Joey, in particular, was a character that we spent like 6 months casting. And I actually met Joey. He's a Canadian actor. I met him. I saw his reel, and I auditioned him through Skype. And he came on only about a week before we started shooting. And the other character that was really challenging to cast was part of Shaney. I had been searching for months and months and meeting lots of talented actresses, but there's like a special quality that I wanted Shaney to have that I just wasn't quite finding. And I actually remember it very vividly. I was standing in our offices. We had a woman outside who was about to come in and read, and somebody happened to find Evelina's reel, and they showed it to me, and I was just like blown away. Like, the second I saw it, I knew I was looking at Shaney. And it's kind of funny because, my producer's like, okay, we have to see this girl who's waiting outside now. And I was kind of like, why bother? Like, I knew I had my Shaney. But don't get me wrong, we obviously were very nice to her and we auditioned her. But there's just no way that this other woman was not getting the part at that point, Evelina. So I immediately got on the phone with her and I was like, you have to do this movie.
So I've got to ask, the preparation for you personally going from doing, like, the previous film was that great documentary, Angel of Nanjing, and going from that to a drama of this nature. I mean, how much did you change the way you do your process, or was it, did you find that it was kind of similar?
It's a totally different animal, but it's interesting because my background has always been in narrative storytelling, fiction, and I never thought I would want to do a documentary. The reason that project ended up happening is I read about what that guy was doing in China, all the lives he was saving, and I was just so inspired by it. I was like, I have to make this story. Like, there's no question for me, regardless if anybody sees it or not. It's like, I just have to do it. So I had already started writing Painless before making that documentary, and the entire time I was in China, when I wasn't filming, I was writing the script. And then as soon as I got back into town, even before we started editing the documentary, I started like kind of trying to get Painless off the ground. But as far as the difference, if I think that was your question, is what the difference was, or...
Yeah.
It's such a different animal. You know, narrative is you're just kind of, you show up with your camera and you just let whatever unfolds, unfold. And then you kind of, a lot of it, you kind of end up figuring out in the editing. With Painless, it's all about pre-production and you know, you live and die by how prepared you are and you know, your casting is still important and your locations and making sure the scene works the way you want it to before you go to set. You know, one of the biggest lessons I learned was that literally, because I thought I was as prepared as you could be, and literally everything that could possibly go wrong on a film of this size will go wrong. like literally we were losing locations at the last second, and we had a blizzard come through the day we were supposed to do the community greenhouse scene. It was supposed to be a community garden in Brooklyn, and this huge blizzard came through. So we scrambled to find that greenhouse at the last second, and I had to change a lot of the dialogue to make it fit. And literally the only thing that kind of got me through that was preparation. Like, knowing if there was a flaw, I feel like in my preparation, I think there were particular scenes that I would not have been able to figure out. But because I had a very strong idea of kind of what I wanted the scene to be, I feel like I was able to pivot when something crazy happened, like a blizzard came in and destroyed our location.
So I've got to ask, how long have you had this idea? Is it based on anyone you know, like maybe not to the extent of the character being completely painless, but the science behind it? I mean, was it something that you knew beforehand, or you just got interested in?
Yeah, so great question. I'd actually had this idea for several years before we actually went and made the film. You know, I always wanted to make... I was living in New York, and I was very interested in making a story about urban loneliness and isolation. And I remember I was sitting in a coffee shop, and I read about these kids that had this condition and how serious it was, because, you know, pain is our first teacher. It teaches us how to protect ourselves. And without that knowledge, you know, a lot of these kids were getting killed or getting very seriously injured without even realizing it. So I kind of began imagining, it almost like it popped into my head instantly, that like this guy who was an adult who learned to survive with his condition, and the way that he learned to survive is by being overly cautious and afraid of everything. And as a result of that, he's completely closed himself off from everything, and he has no life. And it kind of, the image of him is kind of the first thing that popped into my head, and it's very vivid and strong. And I remember texting a friend of mine at the coffee shop and saying, I just found my next film. And to kind of further answer your question, you're asking about the science. All of the science is real in the movie. It's something we worked really, really hard on. It's obviously a real medical condition. And I have no science or medical background at all. It was all very new to me. I never wanted to kind of undertake something that required so much research for my first project, but I feel like it had to be real for this film to work. You couldn't fake it. You couldn't phone it in. Nothing throws me as a viewer out of a movie more than when I know the science is total, you know, hooey, you know what I mean? Total bogus stuff. So it just had to be authentic and real to me. So the first thing I did back when I was trying to write the script is I recruited a couple of science advisors who I met on Craigslist. And together we kind of just threw out all these ideas, like, how would Henry be thinking about it? What would he go about doing? What kind of research would he do? What kind of experiments would he do? And literally, from all the way through the scripting of the movie, all the way through production, we had science and medical advisors on set every day. And literally every single thing Henry writes on the board or types into a computer is all real, and every experiment he tries is completely real. So it was really daunting. It was a huge undertaking, and I don't know that I could do that again anytime soon. It took a lot out of me, and it's another reason it took so long to get the film made, because we had to get all that right. I know I've been answering this question for a really long time, but this is just a really funny side note that I want to tell you. One of the big problems we had, I had to put the script down for a long time because we needed there to be a big breakthrough in the movie. And the problem was, you know, my science advisors were like, there's nothing left for him to do. He's done everything. Like, there's no more science to put in the film, or there's nothing else left for him to try. And it was killing me. And then while I was in China making my documentary, we were on a break. And at the time, if you were to Google the condition, every single thing you would find would say it's the result of a mutation in the NTRK1 gene. And I happened into a Google search while I had some downtime, and there was this one posting that popped up. This one guy was basically theorizing that, well, maybe it's not true in all of the cases. Maybe, like, the majority of the people, it's a mutation in that gene, but maybe for some of them it's also a mutation in this SDN9A gene, which has very, very similar properties to that other gene, but it's actually different. And I showed that to my science advisor, my lead science advisor. He, like, flipped out. He's like, this is amazing. It was, like, the big eureka moment we all needed. And what's amazing about it, too, is that it ties in perfectly with Andrew's condition, because in both Henry's condition and in Andrew's, it's a problem with the sodium channel. So it perfectly just tied in all of the loose story threads that we were having and having trouble figuring out. And literally, like, from the day that I figured that out to, like, having a final draft of the script was, like, a matter of weeks. It just instantly, the whole thing fell into place.
So I've got to ask about getting those two actors to play the two different doctors, Dr. Andrews and then Dr. Parks. How much fun was it casting those two guys? I think there's a bit of a yin-yang. They're very similar, but obviously on two very different spectrums as far as how they want Henry to live his life.
Exactly.
Can you talk a bit about the fun and kind of having that element where you had, like, a good angel on a shoulder and a kind of a devil on the other shoulder?
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. You know, Henry's kind of in the middle when the film starts, and during the film, as it progresses, he moves further and further away from Ray's point of view and further towards, you know, Andrew's point of view, and he takes more risks and becomes more unethical and willing to do more dangerous things to kind of get what he needs. That whole yin-yang kind of dynamic was always there, I think, from the beginning, or from very early on. I got really lucky in the casting process. Again, we had no money. Everybody got paid on this film, but very, very little. I mean, it was that ultra-low budget, and I feel like to be able to have gotten the two people to play those parts that we did was kind of a miracle. And I think, not to toot my own horn at all, but I think the reason I was able to do it is they both responded very positively to the material. Did that answer that question?
Yeah, definitely. Another kind of interesting part, I went into the film and I was curious, he's stuck in this little room, he's in New York, he's always trying to experiment, and I was like, how does he make money? And then you had that great idea of, well, he's a scientist, I'm sure he can figure out a way to make money, and drugs are obviously, you know, a way to do that. When did that idea come in? Because I think that kind of, for me at least, I was like, oh, I totally understand now, he's kind of like Neo in the Matrix. He makes stuff on the side just to live, you know?
That's a great example. I hadn't thought of that one. But I think that was there very early on, just because I wanted, you know, a fun, interesting way for him to make money that tied into his skill set, which is obviously, you know, things that have to do with pain and science. Interestingly enough, this movie was written, you know, right now there's, like, you hear about the major opioid crisis we're in. This movie was written and shot before all that started becoming so mainstream. So I always find that kind of interesting now when I hear about that. But I think that's something that was always there very early on. I wanted the film to have a little bit of suspense to it also, and I felt like it added another layer to that. Eddie, the drug dealer, was actually written to be a bigger part. You found out a lot more about his backstory and how him and Henry got involved, and he alludes to it in the movie, the final part of the movie, about trying to get involved with, like, a bigger drug dealer and kind of take this small little thing that Henry's doing just to, you know, Henry's just trying to pay his bills so that he can focus 100% of his efforts on the research he's doing. He doesn't want to get sidetracked with a business or anything. But Eddie is really trying to kind of pursue that agenda and get out of poverty. He's obviously very poor, as you can tell in the movie. But unfortunately, like, for timing reasons, it just it was just starting to get a little distracting from what the meat of the story was, which is really, you know, to me, the story is really about Henry's journey of acceptance and, you know, accepting who he is and not needing to be quote unquote normal or to quote unquote fix himself.
One of the kind of elements of the movie I really love is the music and your composer's choices. Can you talk a bit about the feel of that? I know you've worked with David before. I mean, how connecting were you guys on this film? Because I think that's a really, the way you guys get us through scenes is really, it's haunting at times, but it's also really fluid. You guys don't ever leave us with like a dull moment because of the music.
Yeah. I mean, David is, you know, a genius. I love working with him. I was really fortunate that I had the working relationship with him on my documentary. So I was talking to him very early on about this film. I actually sent him a couple versions of the script. I sent him the first rough cut we ever had before there was even an opening with the kids. Like, that was shot out later. But, we had some temp music in there that was of a similar nature. I kind of always knew the vibe I wanted to have, but it didn't, you know, David really was able to put a Henry's theme in there and make it more emotional and more heartfelt, which I think it really needed. I love working with him so much. I can't imagine not doing the film with him at this point. And what was so great about having done Angel before and then going right into this is, We kind of developed this way of, like, this shorthand, this style of talking where, you know, I don't necessarily know how to speak the way a composer would or talk about things musically the way he would, but he understands, when I say something, he understands how to translate that to scoring now and to composition. So we really developed a dialogue, you know, just a way of, like, and a common understanding about films and how the feeling we were trying to get. You know, David just did Bel Canto, by the way, which is that $15 million Julianne Moore movie that just came out.
So I noticed kind of just in searching into your career, you have some interesting Texas ties. You shot a couple things for some cowboys, and what? How did you, do you have Texas ties, or was it just kind of jobs pop up?
Yeah, that was just a happy job that I fell into. I was, at the time, I was a producer at MTV, and prior to that, I had spent a lot of time in Colorado helping a friend of mine start a production company, and he called me up while I was in New York working at MTV. He's like, this job kind of fell into my lap. I need a good director. He's like, can you be here tomorrow? And I literally, like, it was just a really cool opportunity. So I got my ass to Texas like that night, and I remember there was a big storm and one of my flights got canceled and I didn't think I was going to make it, but I ended up showing up right before the shoot, and like I was prepping on the plane, which was insane, trying to like figure out what our shots are going to be and stuff. But yeah, it was a really fun project. I don't really have any other ties to Texas other than that. It's just kind of like a happy accident that fell into my lap.
Now, you did bring the film to Austin for Other Worlds Film Festival. What was that experience? I know that's a kind of a, it's a prestigious film festival, but it's also a wacky one.
Yeah, actually, I didn't get to go, which really sucked, because we were also in a festival in Anchorage, Alaska, and Whistler, Canada at the exact same time, and there's just no way to do them all. So I was really bummed that I didn't get to go because of what you just said. It is kind of wacky, but in, like, the best possible way. Bears, I don't know if you know Bears, but he's a super cool guy that runs the fest. And he just got this team of really passionate filmmakers. And the way we got into the festival, actually, was Bears contacted me. And he's like, hey, I heard about your film. I want to play it, or I want to see it. I was like, hey, man, I'd love to submit you, but just so you know, I don't think it's right for you, like, because it's a sci-fi film fest. And I'm like, you know, we have a lot of science in the movie, but I don't think it's like that kind of hardcore sci-fi that you're looking for. And he's like, well, just send it to me. He's like, we just program good stuff. It doesn't have to fit that, you know, mold too much if we like the film. And I sent it to him, and sure enough, he programmed us. I was really happy about that. And actually, Joey ended up winning the Best Actor Award for that. So he was really happy about that. That was the first piece of real recognition he'd gotten for the film. And he was kind of elated when he found out he won that award.
So I've got to ask, where does Painless go from here? What's the next couple of steps for you in getting this out into the world?
Yeah, well, it's opening tomorrow in Los Angeles at the Lamley Music Hall. It's getting a brief theatrical run, and then it is going to expand to another city in November, I believe. And that's pretty much it for its theatrical run. It's going to come out on VOD and DVD on October 2nd. And we'll kind of see where it goes from there. I'm not supposed to mention the name of the network, but there is a major cable network is going to be airing in January.
Oh, congrats! Very cool.
Thank you. Yeah, I can't put it in print. Hold on, there's a truck. Sorry.
Well, I guess
the truck just drove by.
Oh, no worries. You still sound good, Jordan. Kind of last question then. Can you let us know what you're working on personally next, or do you have any sneak peek of what's coming up?
Well, I'm writing a script right now that I'm super excited about. It's kind of, it's something that I've always wanted to do. It's really out there. I really hope I get the opportunity to make it. Painless was obviously done as kind of like a calling card film to kind of, show that I can make a film, and I'm really hoping it allows me to get that opportunity. I am also toying with a fun little documentary idea that I've been doing some preliminary shooting on, and I've been doing a lot of producing, actually. I just produced a project I'm really excited about, and my friend has a movie called Jonah that he's trying to shoot in the next few months, and he's just getting the financing together, but I'm helping him put that together as well. So, yeah, Painless is just now coming out, so we'll see if it opens any kind of doors or what kind of opportunities are presented from it, but I'm really excited about, it's taken a long time to get here with this film. It's a very, difficult film to get out there for a lot of reasons, and I'm super excited and hopeful that it's going to lead to something, so that hopefully we'll find an audience, so we'll see what happens.